Coming up on Tech News Today, you can't buy the Retina iPad Mini in meat space, ladies and gentlemen. Also, Facebook joins the most powerful lobby group in the world. And who's killing TV? A lot more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, November 12th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT11. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. And by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zachter.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show that keeps you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world and tries to make some sense out of them for you, starting with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feeds. The Retina iPad Mini launched today in the Apple Online Store in the same 41 countries that the iPad Air launched in. 16 and 32 gigabyte Wi-Fi models were shipping in 1 to 3 days, while other models were taking 5 to 10 days. While online orders can be picked up in store, the Mini will not be available in retail stores for the time being.
Google Glass might seem like a pricey piece of wearable technology for $1,500, but what if it was also your music device? The New York Times reports Google will allow Glass to search for songs, scan through playlists, and listen to music in high fidelity. This can all be done while a user is wearing the lensless frames. They're responding to vocal commands and have a small computer and transparent projection screen above the right eye. Google's also introducing a set of earbud headphones designed for Glass, which will be available by the end of the month for $85.
Apple and Samsung are back in court to argue damages. Now, Apple won a patent infringement case against Samsung to the tune of over $1 billion. That amount was later reduced to $450.5 million after U.S. District Judge Lucy Koh found the jury to have miscalculated. In this latest case, the jury will do the math again to determine how much money Samsung owes Apple.
The new iRobot Roomba 880 autonomous robot vacuum cleaner doesn't have brushes, so you don't get your fingers all dirty cleaning out the hair for clumps from it. The company says its new system has 5 times the suckage of the last model, which is a good thing in vacuum land. It also has 60% more room for dirt, so you won't need to empty it as often. Wired reports the new model operates quieter and faster. It's available now from the iRobot site for $700.
Google's announced that its app translation service is now available to all developers. It was announced at Google's I/O conference earlier this year and allows for devs to hire human translators across the world to transcribe their apps from English into a variety of local tongues. Google announced at I/O a suite of localization services and techniques to help developers be able to support international launches of their apps, such as the ability to accept a variety of forms of payment and currency through Google Play and to test a localized app.
Facebook just joined the GSM Association. Now, the GSM Association is the body that standardizes the GSM telephone system and is made up of mobile carriers and others. Facebook is the only social networking company that's a member of GSMA. Facebook's VP of Partnerships, Dan Rose, told Fierce Wireless that Facebook looks forward to playing an active role as a member.
Samsung says its first smartphone running the Tizen operating system is behind schedule and won't be released until 2014. The Korea Herald reported the delay from a summit on smart TVs. Samsung's head of visual display was commenting that Tizen TV would not come until after the phone OS makes its debut in 2014. Samsung originally announced at Mobile World Congress in February that the first Tizen phone should come by the end of this year, but not going to happen.
Hey, guys, you know what Bing did?
What did it do?
Bing came in like a wrecking ball. Because music video support is the latest in a string of updates for Bing, which includes adding image collections, highlighting trending social topics, and retaining Twitter posts in search results. So when you query an artist's name or a song in the video tab, Microsoft Search Engine now shows a collection of clips from YouTube, from Vimeo, MTV, and other sources. The most popular music video appears at the top of the page, along with info and a list of songs by its artist.
And you won't stop, and you can't stop.
Nope.
Earlier, we reported Intel was rumored to be in talks to partner up with or even sell its Intel Media Division to Verizon. Now, Bloomberg reports that Liberty Global, the folks who own Virgin Media, are interested in Intel Media. Intel has been developing an internet TV box called the OnQ. They originally planned to launch that thing this year, but in September, they delayed the launch until 2014.
A new software update to Lytro's desktop and iOS app means any image shot with a Lytro camera can now be seen in 3D. Lytro also landed a new partner. Its camera can now be found in Apple's online store. The Apple online store gets two exclusive new color variants of the camera, cobalt blue and the limited edition champagne.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace.com, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your space on the web, your own website. Maybe you are someone who wants to create a fan site for your favorite musician lady or something like that. Or maybe you've got a portfolio, or maybe you've got a small business. Whatever it is, whatever you're doing, whatever you create, you can create your own space at Squarespace. They're constantly improving their platform. Beautiful designs. They have 20 new beautiful templates in there. If you haven't taken a look at them, they win design awards from night until dawn all the time. The FWA, the Webbies, Forbes Awards. That's with three W's in it for World Wide Web. Plus, they're easy to use. If you want some help, Squarespace has an amazing support team 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Most of the stuff is just drag and drop, though. And they're inexpensive. Starts at just $8 a month, includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. My favorite thing is those mobile-ready designs. I have two websites on Squarespace, swordandlaser.com and tommerrittbooks.com, and they both look great when I pull them up on a phone. So many websites, you pull them up on a phone, it's like, I got to zoom in, or things just aren't laid out correctly. But with Squarespace, if you have a Squarespace site, everything looks right. Everything's easy to use on the small screen, on the middle-sized screen, on the big screen. Even their code is beautiful. And hosting is included. Don't forget the reliability. You're not going to have to take this and put it on some host that might just fall apart at the breath of a wind, a gust of like five visitors come. No, that's not going to happen with Squarespace. They're incredibly reliable. Start a trial with no credit card required. Start building your website right now. Do it. Serious. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code TNT11 to get 10% off and to show your support for Tech News Today. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. So go get, do the free trial, if nothing else. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. All right, joining us now, bellying up to the old round table. Sarah's got cake, and we've been talking about ice cream before the show. I feel like we should have a big spread of food on the round table today. Mr. Lamar Wilson, host of This Week in YouTube. How's it going, man?
Doing good, and whenever there is cake and ice cream, I am around.
We are the cake and ice cream of tech news. Yes. Right here.
As you can see, I love cake and ice cream. All right, it's good to see you all, though.
Yeah, good to see you too, man. Let's start with our first course, Sarah Lane, an aperitif of iPad mini.
Yeah. Luckily, it'll fit on this plate.
It looks like a cake.
With my chocolate the cake. iPad mini. I felt the need to show it just because otherwise people are like, what are they talking about?
Pixar, it didn't happen.
Really eating cake. Yeah, so 3 weeks after the announcement, the iPad mini with Retina display, that's its official name, of course, is now available for purchase in the online Apple store. Now, of course, the iPad Air was released earlier this month. And at the time, Apple wasn't saying anything about when the mini was coming out. And there was a lot of speculation is because there was supply chain constraints with manufacturing plants in Asia. And it was a little bit of a, is this thing even going to be available for this holiday season? Which, of course, is a really, really, really big season for Apple. In a press release, and by the way, there was a lot of rumors about this last night, and publications were clamoring to say, no, there's not going to be a mini. Of course, the Apple store goes down at about midnight, which usually indicates that something like this is going to happen. In a press release today, Apple announced that the new iPad mini is currently available to order for delivery, to reserve for in-store pickup at an Apple store, or to purchase from AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile, Verizon, or an Apple-authorized reseller. So to pick it up at an Apple store, you have to reserve it online. Supplies are already pretty limited. Some people are already claiming that Their window of days has increased significantly in the last couple of hours. The release also doesn't detail what countries will immediately have the Retina Mini in stock. Phil Schiller says, we're working hard to get as many as we can in the hands of our customers, blah, blah, blah. Apple's not really saying anything. They said this about the 5S as well, the 5S has remained extremely popular, and certain colors like the gold are still hard to come by, depending on where you are. What do we think? Do we think that this is Apple saying, well, we got to roll out something as soon as possible and sell what we've got, and perhaps this will keep the whole thing a hot ticket item because it's hard to get? What do you think, Lamar?
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. I happened to be up last night at midnight doing something else, completely forgot about it. Someone tweeted that the store is open. So I ran and saved and bought the 64 gigabyte of the space gray. Now, what's interesting about that one is that that's a 5 to 10 day business window. But if you got the 16 and 32, it's a smaller window. So I don't mind waiting for the bigger capacity. But yeah, I think this is Apple just trying to get something out because their supplies are going to be very, very constrained. And it was almost like they just sneaked this out. If you happen to be up, hey, you got lucky and got it. And if you didn't hear about it, oh well.
It is an odd thing, though, when they say iPad and Retina Mini coming in November, and Apple's done it before where they push those definitions sometimes to the breaking point, sometimes even missing them a little. They could have put this thing out at the end of the month. Maybe they were worried about not having it available during Black Friday or not wanting to compete with all of the news in the last week of November, at least here in the United States when we have our big Thanksgiving Day sales. But I wonder why, when it's not really all that readily available, they went ahead and pushed it out.
I got just a little thought on it. I know the iPad Mini does not compete with consoles, but it is a gaming platform of sorts. So it makes me wonder if they wanted to kind of secure that money before people went out and got their PS4 and Xbox One. It's something to think about because I do play games quite a bit on my iPad Mini.
Yeah, I agree with Lamar on this one. It seems like the news cycles are going to be dominated by the Xbox launch, the PS4 launch, and Apple doesn't get this Mini out in later November like they claimed. That would be just something that was forgotten about. I was just surprised about how quiet this release was. It wasn't like, okay, it'll be available tomorrow. You get it at 8 o'clock like they do with the iPhone. They build lines up, that kind of thing. It's almost like they want to have a very orderly purchasing of the iPad Mini with Retina. It just seems really quiet for them. Probably limited supplies, but probably by December or so, they probably should ramp it up and have availability for everybody. Because it's now, everyone who has it is special for just a little while.
It is very odd that it was like, oh, yeah, by the way, here's an afterthought. Maybe if you want to order this, you'll get it. Sure, now they're available. It's un-Apple-like, although Apple itself is un-Apple-like, I guess. I keep saying that, and now I should probably just count on not counting on them for anything. But it is odd. And maybe you're right, Ayaz. Maybe it's like because it's kind of a word of mouth thing. If you work in the industry, if you cover Apple, obviously you know all about this. But a lot of people might just be like, oh, is that something that I could get? Oh, I don't know. Maybe I'm not in such a huge hurry because there wasn't a lot of fanfare. It just kind of became quietly available.
Yeah, I guess they weighed the balance and said, we'd rather be taking orders we can't fulfill right away than not being taking orders at all. And then people have dropped all their dough on other products by the beginning of December. But it looks like they can't make these things fast enough right now. There have been lots of rumors about supply chain issues and supply problems on this particular iPad Mini Retina. Good luck. We have some folks in the chat room said they were able to order one just now. I hope it arrives soon. I hope yours arrives soon too, Lamar.
Yeah, one fun thing is that unlike Amazon, man, they take your money fast. I mean, the minute I make that order, they take it right out the bank account, whereas Amazon doesn't do it till you ship. So yeah, I guess Apple, they really want to get that money secured for getting.
They have a long Christmas list. They need that money for.
Exactly.
I want to tell you guys a story. We heard that NewsFuse item Ayaz told us about Facebook joining the GSM Association as an associate member because they don't actually run the GSM network. GSM Association is one of the most powerful lobbying groups in the world. They run Mobile World Congress. They lobby governments all over the planet for their members, for their telecom members. Facebook, if you remember, started internet.org recently with the purpose of developing online mobile infrastructure in developing countries. So it makes sense that they'd want to be in the GSMA and get some of that lobbying help for internet.org. Now, Interestingly, last week, Financial Times had an interview with Bill Gates. They asked him about internet.org. Zuckerberg has been sort of, a protege of Bill Gates. And they said, what about this idea of the prioritization of connectivity? Bill Gates sold the Financial Times as a priority. It's a joke. And then he went on to say, take this malaria vaccine. Which is more important, connectivity or a malaria vaccine? If you think connectivity is the key thing, that's great. I don't. Reuters reports today that Africa is one of the fastest growing smartphone markets. One out of every three Africans have a mobile phone. But the GSMA is warning the governments of Africa, well, if you don't cut those taxes, the industry might slow down. That's what a lobbying group does. They go in and they try to get tax breaks for their members. Now, Bill Gates wrote an essay today in Wired saying, here's my plan. This is the title of the essay. Here's my plan to improve our world and how you can help. And he details something he calls catalytic philanthropy, pretty much arguing that tech should dedicate itself partly in service to help people left out of the benefits of innovation with key things that they need to survive. So here's my question. It seems like Gates is poo-pooing internet.org and smartphones as being the priority. Is Gates just being an old man, or is Zuck just parading selfishness as altruism? In other words, he wants to be in on the biggest, most powerful lobbying group in the world and look good doing it. And if he can get more connectivity, he can sell more. He can sell more ads on Facebook because more people will be using it. How important is a smartphone or any tech to enabling the change of basic conditions? Lamar, how do you feel about this?
Yeah, I don't think he's being an old man. I think he has the years and wisdom that Zuckerberg just doesn't have. This is a tough situation because you obviously if you put tech and saving someone's life, of course someone's going to say, well, duh, the vaccine. You know, so that's the priority. And, you know, at first I was like, well, why are they pushing so many phones in Africa? They need so much more. But on the other hand, you look at the phone and having basic tech could enable them to get more of the services they need, especially if they're in rural areas or hard to get to areas. They need supplies or medicine. They're able to call or use data connections. So I'm in a really tough situation with this story. I kind of read it over and over, trying to figure out where is the balance there. I think, in my opinion, Bill Gates is more on it with this as tech, you know, being part of the solution but not the solution.
Yeah, and he's not saying tech is unnecessary. In fact, mm-hmm. If you read his Wired article, he talks about what tech can do, but he's saying we got to have our priorities straight. Ayaz, how do you feel about
this? When Gates was a young guy, he was thinking about taking over the world with software, not necessarily altruism and saving the planet and all this other stuff. It was getting Microsoft on every desktop or a computer on every desktop running Microsoft software. So in his older age, he's become a philanthropist and a person who is about world health. If you're going to put priority on one or the other, in his advanced age, it's pretty easy to go, well, I've got billions of dollars thanks to all the selfish stuff I did before. Now I can take over. I can help the world in another way. It should be above. Health should be above technology. But like Lamar's saying, the same thing about these phones, having the connection, the ability to have education as to what's actually mm-hmm. causing your ailments or to find out, to equip people with the ability to research on their own, that is incredibly important, but it can't trump a vaccine.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can look up stuff all day long and be like, hey, it sounds like I got some terrible malaria. But like, if you don't have the vaccine, that's mm-hmm. that's the bigger issue. And I think in many parts of the world, if malaria is such a concern that it can make people extremely sick and in some cases kill them, that's kind of what you got to deal with first before you even deal with the idea of connectivity. It's not just like, hey, if I can access the internet, then all of a sudden life is better. I mean, there's all sorts of, there's education, there's infrastructure, there's clean water, there's not getting bitten by a mosquito and going to the hospital. I mean, that's all really fundamental stuff. So I guess Bill Gates is so rich that now he can do things like that. Well, thank goodness he is, because a lot of really rich people don't care about any of this at all. So
yeah,
I'm with Gates.
It's the balance, right? The smartphone could help you figure out where to find the vaccine faster, yes. Which you might not have that information. So it's all about, prioritization and balance. I really recommend people read this Wired article from Bill Gates. It's very fascinating, very interesting look into that, the way he thinks these days anyway. All right, back into some tech you can wear on your face and listen to music.
So the only person that I really know who has Google Glass is Jason. And he was the one who let me wear his pair for the first time.
You're welcome. Anyway. I know that was life-changing.
It actually was. It was pretty fun, but yeah, then I never did it again. But right. This might make it more interesting for people who might be on the fence about whether or not you want to get into the whole Google Glass thing. The company will release a set of features for music. So as a user, you can search for a song. You can scan through playlists of saved music. You can certainly listen to the music. You can do all of this via vocal commands, which is very cool. There was a mono earbud that Google released earlier this year. It'll be for the updated version of Glass that will be released to its Explore program later this year. We saw images of it and that sort of thing. Mono earbud, you might say, well, for music, that doesn't make a lot of sense. But New York Times is also reporting that Google will be introducing a set of earbud headphones specifically for Glass. They're going to run for about $85, so one would hope that they'd be a pretty decent pair of earphones. Google Glass will stream music through Google Play when a user names a song or an artist. Ed Sanders, who's the director of marketing for Google Glass, said in a statement to the Times that Google is building a great music experience on Glass with these new features. Of course, Google's been expanding the entire Google Glass exploration kit all year. We keep hearing about iterations, so this is just one of the areas that it would make sense for Google Glass to be able to be compatible with. But I mean, I'm a huge music fan. I think I use my smartphone for just listening to music from a variety of places, maybe more than I do anything else. I mean, if you're talking like if you want to compare the hours that I spend listening to music on my phone. So in that sense, I think maybe it will make Glass seem a lot more attractive. Lamar, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I really like Google Play. What is it called? Google Play Music All Access.
Yes,
that's yeah, Play Music All Access.
What a great name!
I know,
but I really like the service. I have Glass myself, and it's like it's literally you can't see it on the camera, but it's like literally sitting back there. I don't use it, and I would hope something like this would enable me to get out there and use it more, because like when I go to fairs or you know something like Six Flags, that's where I wear it to take pictures and listening to music would be kind of cool. I still think Google Glass does not have the cool factor yet to just they become your headphones and they become your everything. You just walk out the house and you know there's unfortunately, even though we shouldn't care what people think, we do, and it still comes off as a little ridiculous, unfortunately. So I still think they have some designing to do to make it where the masses will enjoy wearing this on their face and the $85 earbuds that come and that you can get separately with them.
I feel like music is essential for something like this on your mm-hmm. head at all times or supposedly, you know, they hope on your head at all times and with earbuds. Like music always made sense or podcast listening always made sense. And I was always wondered why it wasn't there. Google obviously wants Glass to replicate a lot of the things that we already do with our phone or whatever, but the benefit being that you're always wearing it. Ultimately, though, like the wide range kind of view of this is if it's doing all of these things, yet it's limited on battery capacity, it's never going to be a perfect solution. Aside from the fact that maybe it looks funny, some people think it looks funny or people don't care the way it looks on their face, Google wants to build all this functionality into it. And all that's going to do is kind of drain that battery and make it last for a shorter amount of time anyways. Sure, you want that there. And that's really cool. And it's great that they're adding more of these functionality. And what else would they do? Of course, they're going to continue to make it better. But they have some challenges in order to really make sure that it solves all those problems.
These headphones things, it just reminded me of the Oakley Thumps. Do you remember those sunglasses that had MP3 players built into them?
Oh, right.
And these earbuds that would kind of go into your ear. It wasn't exactly a wild success by any means, but like Jason's saying, if you're going to wear this thing on your face, I know Google does have song recognition technology, and that seems like the best usage for this. Because trying to get your phone out of your pocket,
right. Hit
Shazam or hit Google's sound recognition search, that takes a little bit longer than just saying, okay, Google, what song is that?
Well, and it's just like taking a picture, right? Like mm-hmm. that's one of my favorite things about Glass is, oh, I want to take a picture? Done. You know, it's that single button or that single voice action that gets you right there. And that's totally the benefit of Glass.
Yeah, and we should not lose sight of the fact that Google Glass is yeah, maybe even an alpha.
Yeah, it's
product,
like it's
not, not even a beta product. Yeah. So seeing them not be everything you want to be, and then slowly add functions in, is kind of what we should expect. And this shows that okay, they're not just letting it sit idly by. They're adding these features that we're all like, why doesn't it have this? Why doesn't it have that? Well, now it does. I'm curious what the next one will be.
You almost have to give Google some credit where Glass is concerned, because Google has a history of launching these things or launching into these initiatives, and they seem really exciting at first. And then it's almost as if internally they lose their excitement for it. And so you see less updates than what you hope you would see, you know, and less support. Google Glass, they're rolling out updates. They're pushing out news every single month. That's pretty cool.
Side effect of Larry Page's Focus initiative, perhaps. Let's take a quick break. Thank our other sponsor for today's show, Gazelle. If you would like to be able to afford Google Glass, if you were a friend of somebody who has it, or anything else, you probably want that mini iPad mini Retina. Well, you can sell your old device and scrape together some cash for it. Gazelle will lock in a price today. If you go there right now, while I'm talking to you about them, you can lock in a price for your iPad, your iPhone, even some of your Android phones. And they'll even buy broken iPhones and iPads. So tell them the condition, get it all taken care of. You've got 30 days to get it to them. You don't have to rush right out and send it to them. You're not like, oh, now I'm going to be without my iPad. No, you've got 30 days to get whatever it is you want. And then you send the device to them. Then you get the cash from them. They'll pay you by PayPal. They'll pay you by check. In fact, if you select an Amazon gift card, you can get a 5% bonus. It's really the easiest way I have found to sell some gadgets, get them out of my house, and turn them into cash. What's your iPhone worth? Take a minute. Go to gazelle.com to find out. Do it now, though, because your iPhone may lose value the longer you wait. And we thank Gazelle for their support of Tech News Today. Now, we mentioned a little bit about the Tizen phone from Samsung being delayed. Ayaz, you've got a little more about the Tizen Coalition of the Willing.
Yes, at the Tizen Developer Summit, which I bet no one knew was a thing, the Tizen Association announced it now has 36 new members. Notable names include eBay here, which is run by Nokia, Konami, McAfee, Panasonic, Sharp, the Weather Channel, and Trend Micro. There's a whole bunch of others.
Nokia, software makers, yes. Service makers mostly. Yeah.
Nokia has also announced that they're going to power maps and maps-related functionalities in Tizen devices. Tizen's obviously based on Linux. It allows developers to program CSS, JavaScript, and HTML5. It's that it's the product of Mego and Bata getting together. That's what Tizen is, if you forgot what that is. And if that sounds like nonsense, never mind. The only device right now shipping with Tizen is a Samsung NX300 camera. Samsung's expected to ship the first Tizen smartphone next year with TVs afterwards. The TV will play second fiddle to the phone because the Samsung representative says the phone will come out first, even though they're developing the TV version of it right now. Lamar, with all of these new members on board with Tizen, do you think it could actually compete in the world of mobile OSs or even in these other devices?
You know, I have to say, nothing excites me more than the Weather Channel, Konami, McAfee, all these great top names. And I hope you detect my sarcasm there.
Just a tad there.
It sounded like a pretty boring lineup. So, I mean, do we need another competitor? There's nothing wrong with another competitor. Samsung confuses me because, you know, they pretty much used up, dried up Android, and they continue to. They come out with all kind of devices, and then now they're going to merge into their own and then leave the Google out. And I think people really buy Samsung phones for the Google products that are on there. And I could be wrong with they. I know Jason runs the Android channel. Maybe he knows something better than me on that, but I really feel like it's really about Google. So when you take the Google out of it, I'm not sure it's going to be as appealing.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. I mean, just in the fact that Android is a Google product brings a lot of extra value with the services that they offer, and Samsung has definitely piggybacked on that, and that's a big part of their success. I think Samsung has a big vision for what they're able to do or what they want to do, whether they could break off from Google entirely and, you know, have the same amount of success with Tizen. I don't know. Something tells me that this is kind of a thing that they do in parallel with Android for as long as they need to until it seems like the appropriate time and makes sense for them to break off Android, if ever.
No, I think you're right, Jason. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Samsung looks at Apple and they say, I want that. I want that control of the platform. But they're not stupid. They're not going to just flip the switch to Tizen and blow off all their sales because of the brand loyalty people have with Android. So they're hoping they can put Tizen out there and start building an audience around it. But Tizen is really targeted at that lower end of the market that Android is also trying to capture more. Remember, Android's biggest supporters are in the high end of the smartphone market. So you've got Firefox OS. You have Yola out there. And those are both going to launch. Well, Firefox OS is already out there. Yola is going to launch before the end of the year with its Sailfish OS. And you've also got Ubuntu Touch out there, which is a wild card as well. There's a lot of competition there. And what it looks like to me when you talk about McAfee, especially, and all these other software and service providers, is Samsung wants to provide manufacturers and themselves with the ability to load a lot of crapware on a phone that serves them. And I just don't think that customers are going to go for that.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Samsung also had its own developer conference where they were talking about having apps for Samsung products, things that take advantage of Samsung APIs that are really running on Android. When it comes to Samsung, it always looks like to me they're hedging their bets like crazy. They've got Android. That's a success. I wonder if they thought it'd be the success it actually is. They have Windows Phone, which is kind of hanging around. They have Tizen sitting around. So they're still having a partnership with Intel that way. And Nokia is in the mix. They're still trying to figure out, well, they're the HERE company, right? So they've got that going on. It just seems like it's just hedging a bet because Samsung will just do pretty much anything. I don't think they have a loyalty. It's we're going to make a ton of products. We're going to sell it, whatever it is, and it's going to work.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, did anyone really think the Android was going to be the success that it is? Well, some people did, certainly, but the market changes really quickly. I mean, a few years ago, it was a very different story.
The Palm world.
Yeah, I mean, this all happens really quickly. And I think Samsung knows, wow, I mean, we've rocketed to the top of the Android chain because, you know, good products, but also good timing. And if we could build something that could shift the smartphone landscape and be the company that built it, or one of the main ones, then that's a good thing too. Yeah, get your own ecosystem along the lines of the App Store, like you mentioned, Tom.
Heard in the news, Intel is still shopping around its Intel Media set-top box. Paul Gagnon at NPD's Display Search had an interesting post yesterday. Supply chain analysis had been indicating up to now, you've been hearing all these rumors, that the Apple television would launch in the second half of 2014. Gagnon says his research now says that those supply chains are turning around, that Apple may be putting on hold their Apple television in order to focus on wearables. Apple would need an exclusive source plan, something like a la carte, something to distinguish how you get the content on the television, or they would need proprietary content that you just could not get anywhere else. And Gagnon says they probably don't have either one of those. And that's why they've kicked it down the road for a couple of years. Intel's OnQ, delayed until 2014, rumored to be for sale to a content-friendly company like Verizon or Liberty Global. Set-top boxes, when you think about it, think about the Roku from 5 years ago. It had Netflix, and that was it. But otherwise, has it really changed that much? They've added other services, but it kind of works the same way. TV sales are in decline. You think about a smartphone from 5 years ago compared to a set-top box from 5 years ago. You take into account those declines. You take into account the manufacturers are getting out of the business of making televisions for the most part. Panasonic not going to make plasmas anymore. Lamar, are content providers strangling the TV device industry?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been thinking about this subject for a while, and I did a video Friday where I was kind of making light of cable because I bought cable and got a set-top box for it just to test it out, and it's just god-awful. It's bad as I remember when I had cable 5-6 years ago, and it's not changing at all. And I think what you said earlier was right, that until this becomes a la carte or something, TV's not going to change. It needs to be something dramatic. And I think if you go by precedent, Apple is the company that does that. They break down those barriers. But yeah, the set-top box market is a weird market. I have the Apple TV. I also have the Xbox 360. But then I'm about to get the Xbox One that connects the cable box and can connect your Apple TV to it if you want. And it's a lot of devices, and I just want one thing that just does what I want. And the cable companies, they don't like that because they lose control instantly once that happens.
Yeah, there's always that one thing that they don't have. Go ahead.
When it comes to Apple and this Apple TV, that the chat room is like it's the internet's unicorn, the latest unicorn. It'll never come out. Or this device, it seems like if it didn't come out a couple years ago, I don't know if they can have a chance with it in the future. Even if you have a 4K display, you have to have 4K content. You have to have something that's really compelling to say, I'm going to buy a new TV right now. The life cycle on TVs nowadays is what, something like 5 to 7 years ago, or like 5 to 7 years, that is, as opposed to the older days where it was 10. So it's shortening a little bit, but people aren't just going to upgrade their TVs like they do an iPhone, an iPad, or a MacBook. So that idea that Apple would get a physical object in your house, a TV, it would have to have some kind of ongoing payment structure where they're getting paid. If it's television through their own services, maybe that would work. But I think the Xbox One's actually getting really close to what Apple was at least rumored to be working on, this thing where you could just say watch ESPN and you don't have to think about what channel it's on. Xbox One's doing all the work. Granted, it's daisy chained to a cable box still, so that's a little lame, but it also has the ability to work with app channels in the same kind of way.
Yeah.
Microsoft seems like it's making the slow progress in the living room, where it might not have a revolutionary product, but it's been evolving really well over the past 10 years. So I don't know if Apple can actually come out with, even if they do come out with the product, I don't know how it can be competitive with what Microsoft's doing right now with the Xbox.
And I really love what Google did with the Chromecast. It's fantastic. And you know, like you say, no one's going to really upgrade their TV and buy a $4,000 or $5,000 TV when I could buy a $35 device, plug it in, hook up my tablet that I bought for a few $100 and use that, or my phone that I have. And so I think Apple shifting to wearables or something more compact makes a heck of a lot more sense than trying to buy, you know, get into something that very few people are going to buy. I don't see the market for a brand new TV.
Yeah, that's what people were saying about tablets. That's what people are saying about smartphones. And why Apple hasn't got in there is they haven't figured out that special sauce, that thing that will compel people, because they can't strike the content deals. That's what I find remarkable about all of these things. Apple can't strike a content deal. It's kicking it down the road. Intel can't strike content deals, so it's selling it off or partnering up. And Microsoft couldn't strike content deals, which is why you've got Google TV inside the Xbox One. It's doing exactly the same thing, which is running your cable box through the Xbox. It's certainly interesting, but it's not the thing that people want, right? It's going to be a little clunky because you won't be able to control your DVR with the Xbox remote and stuff like that. So nobody has really cracked this because the content companies just won't play ball with anybody. They want their continued monopolistic control over the content that they've always had. And, you know, when you've had it for as long as they are, who can blame them for wanting to hold on to it? But really, it really is delaying innovation. Let's talk about 3D, Ayaz Akhtar. This Lytro thing's pretty cool.
Sure, Tom. All right. So let's talk about cameras. Yeah, so there's a couple of cameras in the news right now. Lytro adding 3D viewing capability to its living images. So if you've taken any photos with the Lytro camera and you update your software on your desktop or iOS, you can actually see these images in 3D. If you've got a 3D display, it'll show you that in 3D. If you've got a regular old display, you can use those old red and blue glasses to see the Lytro images in 3D. And the Lytro came out 2 years ago in 2011, and the CEO, Jason Rosenthal, on the question, why did it take so long to get this feature? Because this was rumored for a while. He said he wanted to make sure the 3D features were easily usable and consumer-friendly. Meanwhile, there's another camera getting a lot of buzz right now. That's an Indiegogo project for the Panono. It's a panoramic ball. As you throw this, ball into the air, it uses 36 cameras, takes 72 megapixel pictures. We've seen demos of this before, but now it's available as an Indiegogo project. It uses Bluetooth, and it sends photos to a paired app on either iOS or Android. And then you move your smartphone or a tablet around, and you can look inside the panoramic image. Panano is trying to make about $900,000. The camera is going to sell for around $600, and the goal is to get this out by September 2014. Lamar, what's got you more interested, a Lytro 3D camera you can get today or a Panano throwable camera in the future?
I really like the panini. I mean, Panamo.
It
sounds delicious, but no, the ball looks great. I was watching the video on it, and I see so much potential with that, with group activities, whether you're in a company, corporation, you know, just having fun throwing a ball in the air and taking pictures from everywhere. That's much more exciting to me than the 3D. So panorama all the way.
The thing though is that I agree. I think that's really cool. You know, it's the Times Square version that I was looking at. It's like, wow, that's really cool. And then where does it go? You know, where is that the central place where people share this stuff? Mm. You know, where do you get to upload this somewhere and have everyone go, wow, that's awesome. Let's retweet it a million times. I mean, I think that there's a little bit of that, like, hey, that's cool. And then what do you do with it? You know, you don't really frame it and put it on your wall.
Are you personally hosting it? How else do you share it? The shareability aspect is something about these images you'd want to have. Mm. That was the thing that was holding Lytro back.
Right.
Was that you had to have this flash plug-in thing. Very, very hard to share these images. Maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe. Do you have a Twitter deal or Instagram or something?
Well, a Google deal actually makes perfect sense to me because they already have photospheres. They have a way to play panoramic images and allow you to skip around them. Make a deal with Google. Or Google, make a deal with Panono.
And by the way, you don't always have to throw the ball in the air to take images. You can actually hold it in your hand, take a picture, and hold it on a stick and take pictures. They wanted to make that very clear in the Indiegogo video. It's not just fling and photo.
Right.
That's pretty cool looking, though, I got to say.
That's the prototype. That's much larger than the smaller one that's coming out.
Like a soccer ball, yeah.
Yeah, the smaller one is about the size of a softball.
I love these things. I mean, we'll figure out how to display the pictures. That won't be a problem forever. That's a problem for right now. I love the fact that Lytro can come in and say, hey, all the pictures you already took, they're all possibly 3D now.
That's pretty sweet.
Like, we've been saving the data along the way and figuring out how to pull cool things out of it. I think that's fantastic.
Maybe a throwable Lytro is the next step. They just
throwable
merge
Lytro.
There we go. Just throw it's 360-degree 3D.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's awesome.
That could be really cool.
Yeah.
All right, that's...
I think it's very cool. I'm just sort of like... But in just everyday practice...
Get around.
But, you know, like, give me a good reason. Give me a reason why this makes my
life
better.
Every Christmas party ever would be better with one of these.
I love the pictures of the person, you know, throwing up the ball at the Louvre, but... How often are we all there? I'm just not sure.
It's no chocolate cake. We understand.
Well, what is? What is?
Let's check the randomizer. We had two random stories in the straw poll today, and one of them just trounced the other one. Nobody cares about Twitter's early logos. It's the Homebrew Computer Club reunion on Monday in the Computer Museum in Silicon Valley, and all the stars were there. This is, if you are at all interested in the history of technology and computers, this is going to be a fascinating read for you. The Homebrew Computer Club. Steve Wozniak, of course, the most famous member of it. But don't forget Captain Crunch. John Draper was a member of that. Don't forget that the guy who made the Osborne was a member of that. Don't forget that you can have people telling stories about... Steve Wozniak was telling a story, according to this article on CNET, about how when he showed up at the first Homebrew Computer Club, he thought he was going to dominate it. And then he realized, oh my gosh, they're all talking about 8080 and 8008 chips. I don't know anything about this. Can you imagine being Steve Wozniak and feeling inferior to anyone at any point? We don't think of it that way. But those were the early days. And it's just really cool write-up, really cool pictures from this.
Like that some guys showed up via telepresence robots. Like that just seems like the next step too.
Yeah, Marty Spergel showed up through telepresence and was just wandering around with one. You know, I think we had one of those in the Twit Studios.
We do. We still do. Yeah. You could show up on Tech News Today in telepresence, Tom.
We should do that. We really should. Just one of the things.
You're just wandering around the studio.
Like, yeah.
Stop that.
Anyway, check it out. CNET.com. A few other places. Just search Homebrew Computer Club Reunion. And you'll find the links. We'll have it in the show notes as well. Let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, ProXPN. They saved my bacon this weekend. I was at BlizzCon over in Anaheim, but there was a hotel there. And more importantly, I was out in the Elea Iacta Est Guildhall. That's our Warcraft. It's actually more than just a Warcraft guild. It's a gamers association now. They had a great little room set up for everybody to kind of take a break, get some snacks, and participate in Wi-Fi. And not that I don't trust those guys, I do. But whenever you're using an open Wi-Fi port, it's good to use a VPN. And I was using ProXPN, the global VPN provider. And it worked great. I was able to do everything I needed to do, connect in through that 512-bit encryption tunnel on my laptop. But you can do it on your phone. Works with iOS or Android. In fact, there's a brand new Android app. Well, it's not brand new anymore, but it's relatively new in the Google Play Store. But you can also use OpenVPN or PPTP. You can configure this thing on Linux if you want. They have software for Windows and Mac, offering some advanced controls, allowing you to select programs and ports. I can decide which server I want to connect to and which part of the world. go check it out for yourself. They got world-class customer support. Even Steve Gibson gave it a great review. Go to proxpn.com/twit for more information and to sign up. ProXPN premium accounts are normally $9.95 a month or $74.95 for an entire year. We've got a special offer, though. Use the code TNT to receive 20% off for the lifetime of your account. That's less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. And if you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. So go to proxpn.com/twit and sign up with the code TNT. We thank ProXPN for their support of Tech News Today. To the calendar, Sarah.
Chegg, which is a startup focused on textbook rental and academic services, is IPOing tomorrow. Also tomorrow are Cisco's earnings. Well, it's earnings report. Their earnings are sort of ongoing.
The earnings kind of happen. Let's see if we've got an email.
Incoming message.
Well, yes, we do. We have an email from Rich from lovely Cleveland. Always writes us good stuff. Tom and Posse, I started thinking about the curved iPhone, and I could actually make an argument that Apple might curve it like the Samsung Galaxy Round. Why? Because Apple has always promoted that the iPhone can be used easily in one hand, that you can access the screen using only the thumb and the hand you're holding it with. If Apple moves to larger screens on the iPhone, they will almost certainly have to increase the width. Since the bigger screen on the iPhone 5, I've always thought it looks slightly out of proportion. A slight curve of the screen would allow for a wider phone without sacrificing any of the ergonomics that Apple prides itself on. I still think the edge-to-edge design discussed on the show is more likely, but the more I thought about it, the more it made sense, although I'm probably still wrong.
That's what I love. Rich from Cleveland says it's the best emails because he's aware of what's going on. It's a good point. This totally makes sense. He makes a good argument for a curved screen. The rumors were that it was curved glass, which is different than a curved screen. But maybe Apple should be listening to Rich in Cleveland. I don't know. Give him a call. Send him an email, Rich. Maybe they'll hire you. That is it for this episode of Tech News Today. Lamar Wilson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Hey, it's always great having you. What do you got going on this week in YouTube? You guys are always doing some cool stuff there.
Oh man, that was a big show yesterday. Yeah, this week in YouTube is out. We had iJustine on, and we covered the firestorm that is YouTube and Google Plus comments merging on YouTube. So if you want to see how we handled that on the show with Chad Johnson as well, make sure you go over to youtube.com/twiyt. Or you can check it out on Twit as well. On twit.tv/YT?
TWIYT.
TWIYT. It's a hotbed of controversy, Google Plus thing. We touched on it on Frame Rate, but that it is best discussed on This Week in YouTube. So go check them out. Yes,
please do.
Don't forget, folks, you can submit your own stories. Well, you don't have to write them. You can just find the links. You say, hey, that's an interesting story. That's well covered. Put it in our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, and let us know you'd like us to cover it. Other people will then come in and add their voice, and you can do that to other people's stories as well. Upvote means yes, I would like to hear this discussed. Downvote means no, I don't think this deserves the discussion. And we take in those votes into account when we put together our lineup. You can email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. Give us a call. We haven't had a good voicemail in a while. Come on, keep it 30 seconds. Make it insightful. Make it smart. 260-TNT-SHOW. We have a YouTube channel, too, youtube.com/technewstoday. And, of course, the podcast subscriptions you can find, along with the show notes and everything else, at twit.tv/TNT. We'll be back tomorrow with Kevin Purdy as our guest. We'll see you then.